Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. Communicating across generations can sometimes feel like navigating rough seas, especially with teens who may respond with little more than a shrug or a grunt. Fortunately, our guest today is here to help us steer through those choppy waters with confidence and empathy. Ala Shakina is a mediator and negotiation communication coach. She mediates divorces, workplace conflicts, and family conflict, and uses her 2 decades of theater training in acting and directing in her work as mediator. Some of you may remember Alice from last year's 100th anniversary Toastmasters International Convention, where she presented an educational session on conflict resolution. In June of 2025, she received the Peacemaker Award from Community Boards in San Francisco for all the mediation and conflict resolution work she has done for the City by the Bay. She's the author of Negotiating with Your Kids and is currently working on her second book, Don't Sleep on the Couch, Negotiating with Your Spouse. In her free time, Alice rows on a rowing team and plays violin in a community orchestra. She has 2 boys, 17 and 20, and currently lives in Oakland, California. Alice also penned the May 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine article entitled, Tips for Communicating with Your Teen, Using Effective Talking and Listening Skills Benefits Both of You. Ala Shakina, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here.
Fascinating article and timely because I have a friend who has a son who just turned 13, and what I read just hits all the check boxes. And I also quickly realized that much of your advice can be used way beyond the parent-teen interaction, and we're certainly going to touch upon that.
I'm excited about the conversation.
So to kick us off, we're just going to dig deep into this. Alice, what do you think is perhaps the biggest misconception parents have about communicating with teens? And as a result, what's the biggest mistake they might make?
Well, interestingly enough, I feel like people should really flip the paradigm of, hey, I'm the parent and you need to listen to me, you know, that sort of thing. I think that's great for up till age 12. And then after that, once they turn into a teenager, I think you as a parent should become more a mentor, someone who gives advice, who gives guidance, but is not like firmly trying to control your child. And you really want to listen to them, even if you don't agree with them. I've seen that happen over and over again, where parents actually never, ever listen to their kids. Like, they don't listen to what it is that they want because they just are so firmly against it. They don't even open it up for conversation. And that's when your child is going to feel isolated from you, because they're going to start to feel like, my mom or my dad really doesn't care about what I think, what I feel, what I want. So then they're going to shut down. And that's going to be with anyone, but particularly with your teenager.
So tell us a little bit about this transition from tween to teen. It's not just an age, but it's a mindset.
Yeah, so it's not even just a mindset. They're at the age where they're trying to figure out what do they believe in, right? They're not just going to be a mini replica of their mom and dad. They're trying to figure out what their beliefs are and their values are in the world around them. They have friends who are also influencing them. As a matter of fact, at that age, I feel like their friends have more of an influence on them than their parents do. And so because they're trying to slowly, it's kind of like that cocoon phase where they're going from completely feeling like mom and dad are gods, like, okay, everything you say and do must be the way it is. Now they're discovering the world. And then eventually outside on the other end of that, when they're 20, 21, they're going to be, you know, adults that have their own values, own beliefs, that sort of thing. And so that teenage time is really when they're pulling away. And so if you try to hold on to too much control, you end up losing the connection. The connection is really what you should strive to keep as a parent and do what you can to keep that connection. And so one of the ways to keep that connection is to keep the avenues open to listening. So you don't want to spend a lot of time during this time to say, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that, let me lecture you, let me tell you like it is, right? And start to spend more time learning about what their thoughts are, what are their feelings, what do they enjoy, why, what are the values that they espouse, that sort of thing. So I think that you can do that. And so you relinquish a little bit more control. You stop telling them what to do. You mentor them and you listen.
You mentioned in the article, you say guidance, not orders. And I think that's very effective, or I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yep. But it's hard for some people to do that, right? Because you spent maybe a decade giving orders, you know, being the king of the hill. And so sometimes it is difficult for a parent to make that transition. And so if you are clumsy about making that transition, then you end up losing the connection.
But you're saying in the article, it's more about, it's not just changing what they do or what they say, but you're also saying that as parents, we need to adjust our own attitudes and values. What does that look like?
So it's more attitudes. I wouldn't necessarily that you need to change your values, right? The attitude should be, I want to learn more about this human being who happens to be my child, because now they have their own thoughts and beliefs. I think if we go on parenting our teenagers with the assumption that they are now espousing the same belief system that we have fed to them for the last decade, that is where a lot of us go wrong. I think that this is a human being who is learning to move about in the world. Their values and beliefs may be changing from what you have been teaching them. So be curious. Show up without judgment. Don't judge your child. Don't judge them to be, oh, they're sleeping in, they're lazy, or, you know, they're very irresponsible, or whatever it is, right? Anything negative, remove all judgment. Show up with love and show up with curiosity to say, today, who are you today? What excites you today, right? And I've made the mistake as well where my kid comes home from school or I pick him up and I say, hey, how was school? And he's like, fine, right? And I'm like, wow, that's a fantastic conversation. It ended in one word, right? But to actually talk about things that matter to them. You know, if your kids are into video games, ask what video games are you playing and you know, who are you playing those with? What's going on with your friends? Or, you know, just ask questions about their lives as opposed to presuming that you already know who they are because you've been living with them their entire lives so far.
But if you try to inquire, sometimes it's like, you know, why are you bothering me? And, or I don't care, or I don't want to talk about this right now. How do you get them to start opening up?
It depends. There could be many scenarios that you're talking about. Let's say that there's something that's happening with them. I don't know, something happened and, you know, they're upset about it and you want to be there for them. And they say, well, I don't want to talk about it right now. Okay, that's okay. Just be together. Being in the presence of your child is huge. It's huge for your child. They may not articulate it verbally, but if you can just be there, whether you just hang out in the same place, you don't have to force conversation, whether you watch TV together, you watch a movie together, you go on a walk together, whatever that is, just be with them. You don't necessarily even have to have a conversation if they don't want to. So don't force it. That's number one. Number two, create spaces where you are together. So meaning, you know, if my kid is locked in his room playing video games and I show up and I'm like, hey, can we hang out and talk? Probably he will say no. But if we go on a road trip over the weekend and I say, hey, let's go, you know, somewhere fun over the weekend, we get in the car. So now we're in the car for a couple of hours. So that actually opens up space for us to have fun conversations about. I might ask him questions like, where should our next trip be? And then he might say, oh, let me think about that. I would like to go here. I would like to go there. And now we're off to the races with our conversation. If we're coming back home from the trip, I might ask a question like, what was your highlight of this trip? Like, what was the best thing that you felt we did, right? So those are authentic conversations. They're a place where you can connect with your child. I think it's difficult to just enter into their room, their space when they're a teenager and just say, hey, let's like do something right now because I would like to do something right now and I want to connect, because that's not really a mutual time and space. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. They'll roll their eyes because they're online playing, I don't know, Warcraft with their friends, so they don't want to be interrupted.
Exactly. But it's not just, I mean, yes, they're teenagers and yes, you're their parents, but think about it for yourself. If you are talking to your friend on the phone, and let's say I'm your roommate, Greg, and I just show up while you're in the middle of a phone call, enjoying yourself, relaxing. And I say, hey, Greg, can you get off the phone? Because like, I want to hang out, right? And I would like to do it now because it works for me now. You probably wouldn't appreciate it very much. And you would probably feel like, you know, it's a drudgery because I'm interrupting something that you are enjoying at the moment. So it should be a space where you've both planned something, whether when I say in the future, it could be tomorrow, right? So that you are together. Whether you say, let's go play putt-putt on Friday, right? Make a plan. Make a plan to spend time together. Don't force conversation, but be curious and be interested in what they are doing and what they are interested in.
I can see situations where perhaps a teen is interested in something, and video games is a perfect example, and the parents, that's the farthest thing. How can you engage if that's the situation?
That's hilarious, Greg, because that's me. I have literally negative interest, not even zero, like maybe minus 10 interest in video games. So you're asking the right person. So there are parents who will get on the video game and say, hey, let's play video games together. Great. If you can do that and stomach it, go for it. Because it's way to spend time together, right? And conversations like authentically happen. They naturally happen. In my case, I did not do that. Sometimes I will ask about the video games, like what video games they're playing, what happened to the one that they used to play a year ago, are they no longer playing? So I will make those kind of small conversations, but because I don't have the deep knowledge about that video game, there's only so far that I can go. And so that's the reason for me why I use getaways. And sometimes the getaways, Greg, are not even like, oh, let's take a road trip. Sometimes I'll say, hey, tomorrow night, like in the evening, like, can we all go for a walk? And then my kids will say, sure, they're 17 and 20, but they value time with me. Here's the other secret sauce for me, Greg. I do not request, I'm a single mom, and I do not request that they spend time with me every day. Now, some people, that might be a controversial thing, but I will tell you what, when I request time with them, they jump on that. Because I have not been nagging them daily to eat dinner with me. I have not been nagging them daily. Hey, I need you to spend time, or I need to talk to you, or we need to spend time together. So let's say they're doing their own thing. I'm doing my own thing. And then we haven't really hung out at all for the entire week. And then I say, hey, do you want to hang out? You know, let's go to Japantown in San Francisco. I'm in Oakland, so it's maybe half hour drive. They both are like, sure. Or even, Greg, with my teenagers, when I say, anybody want to go grocery shopping with me? They both go, yes, right? And most of my friends are like, how do you get your teenagers to go grocery shopping with you? Because I make it a fun experience, right? They can get what they want, but also they get to help. They also are helping with bringing things in. And so it's a group like activity, and they have grown up feeling like it's a group activity. It's not something that, oh, it's a chore. I don't want to go. Mom, you should just go on your own, right? And so they see it like, oh, it's something that we can go do with mom, and we can hang out with her in the car on the way home. And we talk about the different things that we purchased and what we're excited to try. Or they might say, look at this drink that I just bought, right? So that's all points of connection.
That's amazing. I was just thinking ice cream.
Well, there you go. Ice cream too. Definitely. We talk about that in the store, right? I'll be like, oh my gosh, you have to go get that. Can you go get the coconut popsicle? Because that's my favorite. And my son will say something like, well, I really prefer the mango. And then it's a conversation. And it doesn't matter what the conversation is about. It doesn't have to be so deep that it's about our values. It can just be about, what flavors of ice cream do you prefer? That's a point of connection.
I'm just chuckling here because obviously you've made a connection with your boys. And I recently read your post on LinkedIn about your son Griffith graduating. Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks.
I love in the post where you said, as a negotiator, you're studying high stakes conversations, but nothing prepared me for negotiating with a teenager.
I know, it's really true, especially one that has grown up in my household, listening to all my negotiation podcasts and my classes, and now they're better than me. And that's the other thing too. Here, I want to talk a little bit about that. I'd love to talk about this, why you should negotiate with your teenager. A lot of people are like, no negotiation. You know, I'm not going to be held hostage by my teenager. But this is what I like to say to that comment. You are teaching your children how to negotiate with every single opportunity that you afford them to negotiate with you. if you allow them to negotiate a lot with you as their parent, when they go away as an adult, they will be master negotiators. They will get ahead in life. They will get all the best deals. You have to negotiate purchasing your home. You have to negotiate getting a job. You have to negotiate buying a car, and on, right? If you have a household where you say, I'm the parent, you're the child, I am not going to allow you to negotiate anything with me, I'm going to call the shots, you're actually hindering your child's ability to become a master negotiator. They will go out into the world and they will not know how to negotiate very well. And so they will flounder, and they could flounder for decades. I run into people who have just found their feet in negotiating in their 50s because they really never were taught how to negotiate as a child.
They probably don't realize that they have always been negotiating. When you say bedtime is 10 and they say, Mom, how about 10:30?
Yep.
They're already negotiating.
Yes. I mean, they even learn to negotiate out of like penalties, right? So if I take away something, my son will come back and say, okay, I would like my privileges back. And I'm happy to do extra X, Y, and Z in order to get those privileges implemented back earlier. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. This is a fair negotiation. If you want to do additional work to get these privileges reinstated earlier, I'm up for that.
Was there a point where you realized, when obviously when you first started out, there was a lot of trial and error. Was there a point in time where you realized, you know what, this works, this doesn't work?
So one of the things that I love that works so well is the two choices, is giving the other, and this can really be with anyone, not just your children, but it works spectacularly. So you want to come up with two options for the other person, and you want to make sure that you do not favor one or the other. That's where people go wrong. They offer two and they favor one. Well, guess what? Probably the one that you don't favor is the one that's going to get chosen, and you're going to feel like, oh, wow, this is not what I intended. So you want to make sure that emotionally you're not attached to either option, and you want to have a little bit in it for you and a little bit in it for them for each of the options. When I do that with my kids love to argue. Guess what? The arguing just stops, doesn't even happen when I give them the two options.
Can you give me an example of that? I'd love to hear one.
Happy to. Probably when my older son was about maybe 16, so 3 or 4 years ago, we had a new kitchen and he wanted to invite his friends. He loves to cook and he cooks like amazing food, right? Like just restaurant caliber, fine dining type food. I said to him, I have one rule. The rule is kitchen should look just like it does when you started, clean. So he said, great. So he invites two friends. They cook. I leave for the evening and I come back in the morning. And then I'm ready to make breakfast for some friends coming over. And there are dishes left in the sink. So I went and woke him up at 7 a.m. And he started in on all the reasons why the dishes weren't done. He says, well, I did 95% of it. You have no idea. We spilled flour all over the floor and the cake spilled over in the oven. He said, I was up until 3:30 in the morning cleaning the kitchen after my friends left. And he said, I was so dog tired. I felt like the dishes were just a small piece of what I actually did. And then he additionally made the argument of, if you can't tell that I cleaned, he's like, that's how good I cleaned, because it was a complete disaster area. So we could have gone to the races with that, right? I could have argued. So I caught myself and I stopped myself and I said, okay, I'm going to give you two options. Option number one, you prioritize sleeping in right now. Totally fine. I will go do the dishes. I will not hold a grudge. And in that option, you also are going to relinquish your privilege of having your friends come over to make dinner in our kitchen. So that's option one. Option two, you keep your privilege to invite your friends over and you clean the dishes right now. He glared at me and he got up and he went and cleaned the dishes.
I think that was a little stacked in your favor.
But it has a little, right? Like I gave him a little bit, which was you either prioritize sleep or you prioritize the privilege. It was his to choose. And for me, the same thing. I either would have done the dishes that morning myself or he would have done the dishes, right? A little bit in it for me, a little bit in it for him. He just gets to choose what is more important for him.
Obviously, Alice, you've had some success with your teens, but I'm curious, how do you deal with teenagers who think they know everything and will listen to nothing?
Well, isn't that what teenagers are supposed to do?
That's true.
I mean, as teens, weren't we all that way as well? I don't know that we can ever change their mindset. We can change the way we communicate with them. We can change the way that we negotiate with them. We can bring data to the table. But attitude-wise, in terms of teenagers thinking they know everything and that their older parents are fuddy-duddies who don't know anything, I don't know that we can actually change that attitude. But we can change the communication around it.
Yeah, you're old-fashioned. That's what they say. You're old-fashioned. So what about in a situation where there's been this ongoing, we'll call it, for lack of a better term, we'll call it a debate, but at some point, both parties just seem to shut down. What do you do then?
So one of the most important things that people need to remember, and especially, this is especially true in family dynamics, is to not come to the table to have a discussion if anyone is feeling emotional in a negative way. If you're angry, you're defensive, you're frustrated, irritated, that's difficult to do in a household, I understand. But you really, especially the adult, you need to make sure that you are in control of your emotions, meaning, and I'm even talking about anger, that you need to be able to come to the table and be calm. And if you can't be calm, you need to excuse yourself and say that you will work on yourself and come back again when you're calm. Now, if your child is the one who is being frustrated and angry, you need to de-escalate them. You can do it in a couple of ways. You can either say, hey, we can just come back to this conversation when you feel a little bit calmer. You can do that. Everyone just takes time out. Or you can employ the mirroring strategy, which is when you mirror back whatever it is that you heard your child say. So in the instance that I just talked about my son, I could have said, okay, let me make sure that I understand what you're saying. You're telling me that your friends left and then you cleaned up the kitchen until 3:30 in the morning. You told me that flour was all over the floor and that the cake was spilling in the oven. So you had to really do a lot of cleaning on the floor and the oven. And it was so much cleaning that you had to do that the dishes that are left in the dish in the sink are just a very small portion of what you actually cleaned. And you feel like you did such a good job that the kitchen actually does look exactly like it did. Is that correct? Right? You see how I just basically mirrored back everything that I heard.
Right.
And so that will de-escalate whatever the person is feeling if they are feeling highly emotional, because they will suddenly feel like, okay, you listened to me and you heard me.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I found it fascinating that when we're talking about frustration, let's say from the perspective of the parents, instead of saying, I can't deal with this right now, go to your room, you say, give me a minute, I'll be right back, or I can't respond right now, I need a timeout, that you put it on yourself. I found that very, very powerful, and also something that I think many parents probably can't do or have never done.
So it's interesting because when you say go to your room, you know, and you're the one that's upset, but you're telling your child to go to your room. I understand it. People might feel like, oh, it is a power play, right? You're the one that's the person with the power, so you can call the shots. But I want people to also remember you are modeling behavior for your child. So that means whatever bad behavior you're modeling, they're going to pick up on that and they're going to execute on that when they're in other relationships. So if you are modeling, I am an adult who can't handle my emotions and can't acknowledge that I am the one that needs a timeout, your child is going to similarly start to model that same behavior where they also do not want to acknowledge their own shortcomings and where they are at fault. So you want to model good behavior, and it's not a weakness to say, okay, I was wrong, I'm sorry, or you know what, I'm the one that needs a timeout, let me just retreat to my bedroom, I will be back in 10 minutes when I can calm myself down. It's not showing a weakness. You're modeling exemplary behavior for your child so that they can do the same thing when they are in the wrong.
That's dead on, because I'm thinking that I've seen the situation where two siblings are butting heads and the older sibling says that, acts like the parent.
Yep. So you want to model correct behavior. You don't want to pull a power move. and model bad behavior, because I guarantee you your child will be doing the same thing with someone else.
Now, of course, you don't want to stay negative, but in the article, you also mention resist being overly positive. What are some of the words that you should or shouldn't use?
Okay, this is really wonderful. I'm glad you brought this up, because this kind of comes full circle to the comment of listening to your child. So if your child says something like, I hate my math teacher, sometimes parents might come to the teacher's defense, right? And say, you know, your teacher's doing the best job and you shouldn't be, you know, mean like that, or, you know, whatever it is. Instead, really try to understand deeply why your child is saying that. I mean, the first thing that I would think of is say, why do you hate your math teacher? And then you will get answers. And then you can ask more questions. Always leave an avenue where you can continually ask deeper and deeper questions. Because the minute you counter and say, well, you shouldn't hate your math teachers, that's not nice, you are now shutting down your own curiosity. And you're also shutting down a point where you can connect with your child, right? Because they're opening up to you about something. They're making an offering. Okay, I hate my math teacher. Here's an offer for an opening of a conversation. If you shut it down, you now have lost connection with your child. It's like they called you on the phone and you hung up on them. So you want to think of comments when your kid brings a comment to you, whether you like their attitude or not. Be curious about that comment. Oh, why? What happened? Like, did you like them to begin with? What is it? Did they say something to you? Are they not explaining things properly to you? Like, what are the reasons that you don't like this person? And then really dig deeply and then have a conversation from there. You don't want to just shut it down by saying that's an inappropriate comment. Then you're shutting down the point where you can actually connect with your child. And if you do that enough times, your kid is going to get the message, oh, my feelings and my thoughts don't matter, because every time I try to bring it up with my mom or dad, I get shut down.
So you're imposing your beliefs on them and you're not going for that clarification, which is what you need.
Yes. And that's the same with everyone, right? Like other adults, if other adults are saying things, be curious. Always be curious about comments that come your way. Or if someone is not wanting to do something, right? And you say, hey, you have to do this. And they're like, oh, I don't really want to do it. And instead of arguing with them why they should do it, you want to find out, like, what's causing the resistance, right? Like, why are you not wanting to? And I'm using the word why, but I always coach people, try to change those questions into how and what questions. Because why usually makes people defensive. It's easier to get past the defensiveness if you can change those why questions and reframe them using how and what.
How and what. Okay. Yeah. So, of course, there's different methodologies and frameworks. In fact, in the article, you make reference to Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication framework. Can you give us sort of a sneak peek as to what that's about and how does it apply to teens?
Yes, it's wonderful. I love the nonviolent communication. I do feel like a lot of people might be missing out because they feel like, well, I don't need to read a book about nonviolent communication because I'm not a violent communicator. However, I think this is a wonderful framework for everyone to use because it really aids in connecting people. So we connect where we are vulnerable. And I know that when there's power involved, whether it's an employer to an employee or a parent to a child, right? The person with the power does not want to show that they're vulnerable. However, that is the point where you actually make authentic connections with someone. So the four steps that he talks about is, number one, you state a neutral observation. Like, for example, when you leave your clothes, your clean clothes on the floor for 3 days, right? That's neutral. Mm-hmm. I didn't say when you act like a slob, that's judgmental. When you are lazy and don't pick up your clothes, right? That's again, judgment. So you want to make sure it's a neutral observation. Step two is letting them know how it impacts you emotionally. I feel, and what's the emotional word? I feel frustrated. I feel sad. What are the things that you are feeling? And then step three is, what is the need for you emotionally? I need to feel like satisfied, I need to feel happy, I need to feel relaxed. What are the things that you need emotionally? And then finally, step four is the request. Could you please pick up your clothes like once, you know, your clean clothes, can you please fold them and put them away within the same day that they get dropped into your room or within the same day that you wash and dry them, right? So the request is coming not until step four. Step two and step three are talking about your emotions, which a lot of people either find to be too vulnerable or they're literally no longer tapped into their emotional life and can't figure it out. When I work with people, a lot of times it takes 20 minutes for them to figure out how they feel emotionally about something. But it's really important because if you can show them, hey, this is how you're impacting me emotionally, that is a point of vulnerability. And when people show vulnerability, that is where they can make the connections.
That's a good framework to look at. We have hardly just scratched the surface in terms of the content in the article and the topic. Folks, if you've enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to share it with your friends and family. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, and anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out Alice's article, Tips for Communicating with Your Teen, Using Effective Talking and Listening Skills Benefit Both of You, in the May 2025 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Alice, I've just found this absolutely fascinating. And everything you've said today not only can apply to teens, but can also apply in the outside world. And I'm even thinking about even new members that come into Toastmasters who are shy or introverted or a little bit apprehensive. This type of methodology can certainly help on having the clubs understand their needs better and to help them gain what they want to gain from Toastmasters.
Absolutely. And even when they're having conflict with members, they can just ask questions, be open, be non-judgmental, and be curious. And if you can at least follow those guidelines, you will be able to sort it out. And you know what I like to say, Greg? I like to say that conflict resolution is easy. Finding the source of the conflict is difficult. Once you find that source that's causing the conflict and understand, oh, this is really the issue, then you can resolve it. Most of the time, people jump to trying to resolve the conflict without really deeply understanding what's really going on. What's really upsetting the person, because it's deeper than what they say it is, right? Because more than likely, they're not being vulnerable and sharing what really the issue is. So they're making it about slightly something else. So once you ask a lot of questions and understand really deeply on a very deep level, oh, this is what's causing the conflict. This is what's making someone unhappy. Resolving that is going to be so much easier.
Sage advice. Before we wrap up, Alice, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the podcast you have, because of course, podcast is of interest to the Toastmasters podcast, and also let us know perhaps where, if someone wanted to reach out and find out a little bit more about what you do.
Sure. Thanks, Greg. So I have a podcast called Negotiation with Alice, and I have guests who come on and ask all kinds of questions about how to negotiate this, that, or the other, how to get what they want, how to ask for what you want, and I give you an answer and we have a discussion. So I invite any Toastmasters to contact me and come on to my show. And I am also offering a communication class starting in September. You can find it on ShekinahNegotiationAcademy.com. And it is a Fluent in Influence course. And we talk about negotiation and communication skills so that you can get more out of your life.
We'll certainly put that information and the links into the show notes. Alice Shekinah, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg.